Hello, the internet, and welcome to season 2, episode 2 of Das Daily Zeitgeist for November 21st, 2017. My name is Jack O'Brien, aka Young Jackfruit, and I am joined by my co-host, Mr. Miles Gray.
Yes, hello, it's your boy Kusama, and shout out to Doug Gibson on Twitter for the kind words and reviews.
And we are thrilled to be joined in our third seat. This is going to be the first time our third seat is remote. He is a hilarious writer who currently writes for SNL. He was one of the co-writers of the David S. Pumpkins sketch from last year, among many great sketches. Please welcome Streeter Seidel.
What's up, guys? Thanks for having me.
And SNL is Saturday Night Live, right?
That's right.
Yeah, that's correct.
Okay,
that's
wanted to make sure we were talking about the same show.
Okay, good. You're doing a real Michael Barbaro
from the other day.
There's this New York Times Daily podcast where the guy just assumes like absolutely no knowledge on the part of his listeners. So he's like, "Now SNL is that Saturday Night Live? Is that?" And then he's like, "Huh?
And Saturday." Saturday is a day of the week.
Right. Yeah, exactly. So Streeter, what's something, that you have searched in the not too distant past that is revealing about who you are as a human being?
I searched cough red bumps back. Because I have an 18-month-old and he was coughing. And he had red bumps on his back. I mean, there's really not much to it than that. But I was like, I guess out of context, this is a pretty weird phrase.
Right. It seems like
cough red bumps back.
Yeah.
And that, I mean, that's just one of, I would say, hundreds of strange, medical words combined in various ways I've been searching for the past year and a half.
Yeah.
Cause these kids, I'll tell you something, these kids, they're always sick.
These kids, I'll tell you one thing. Streeter and I's sons were born right around each other.
And are you searching for that kind of stuff?
So I'm just realizing what a luxury it is to be married to a doctor, because I never really worry about that shit because I'm just like, you deal with it.
Yeah. Hey, doctor, what's going on?
Right.
I mean, I'm married to a physician assistant, but she's like, I don't know. She's like, I do allergies. I don't know what this stuff is.
I Google that shit.
I think that it might just be me being a worse father because I just assume my wife would like notice if anything was wrong.
Maybe I'm being a worse husband,
right?
By not trusting her.
Do you find yourself as new fathers? I guess this is to the both of you. Do you find yourself Googling all kinds of things to try and like understand the new life form that you're taking care of?
Constantly.
I'd say quite a bit. And also like what he should be doing at any given time and like what I should be doing. And,
right.
Yeah.
And just Googling, hey, what do I do right now with my baby?
Right.
And
yeah.
It's like, we need more context to answer this question. Right.
A lot of it for me is like in that, I mean, it's like, I'll call it Googleese or whatever, like the language that you search things in of just being like, you know, boy, when talk, you know, boy, when draw circle,
right?
Like, it's a lot of like, is he on track to be a genius? Cause if he's not, I don't know what I'm going to do.
Right. Wow. He's drawing circles already. That's
well, he calls them circles. Stuff. They're kind of scribbles, but. Wow.
Well, the fact that he can call it anything is pretty good.
Come on, Jack. What are you bringing? What's your kid drawing?
You guys, I gotta go. I gotta go.
Yeah, my kid's already doing sacred geometry, so well, maybe we'll catch up.
Streeter, what's something you think is overrated?
All right,
fatherhood.
This being Thanksgiving time, well, in terms of fatherhood, the first 3 months of fatherhood are very overrated in my experience.
Yeah.
They're really bad and not fun and very not rewarding. I mean, just a lot of work and very little pleasure or thanks.
Right.
Your only reward is just that
you're keeping the thing alive because there's no –
and
that's
honestly,
all
not
you're
even
getting.
That.
Right.
It's like you're keeping your wife alive by like bringing home food who's doing all the work.
Right.
But for some reason you have to stay awake too is what I noticed.
Right.
Like she would just wake me up and you know, be like, the baby's crying and I need to breastfeed him. So you're going to wake up too.
Right.
Like, okay, I guess I'm just cool. going to sit here. So I found that. And then, you know, very quickly, that goes from being overrated to underrated. And you're like, oh my God, this is the best thing in the world. But man, those first 3 months really stink. Don't believe anybody who says that they loved it.
Yeah.
They're lying. They're liars.
But it really does also get better and better as you get older and as they get older.
But also I think overrated is that dumb dog show that's on, that's on every Thanksgiving.
The dumb
no
dog
show? No one cares
show?
About, you know, the Westminster Kennel Club
oh,
show?
Oh, yeah, right. Yeah.
People act like this is a cool thing that they look forward to. And I'm like, are you interested in competitive dog breeding or whatever they're being judged on? I don't even know.
Right. It's just,
I find that to be pretty boring to be honest.
The best thing to come out of that, I think, is Best in Show, the movie.
Right.
Like the one thing.
They should just show that movie instead.
Yeah.
Cause that's great.
Right.
I just don't know, like, how you compare. Like, I get it if it's like, okay, it's all Labrador retrievers and we're going to judge them against each other. But like, you're putting like a Mastiff up against a Shih Tzu, up against a Dachshund. I'm like, how can you compare these two creatures? Like, clearly they're both their own kind of monster that we made. So, you know, I don't know. Anyway.
Yeah.
Overrated, in my opinion.
I feel like it would be more interesting if you could, like, mix up breeds and, like, have a St. Bernard-sized Shih Tzu or something like
have
that.
Have a mutt show. Yeah. Where's the mutt show at? I'm ready for the mutt show because I think most people in this day and age, we rescue dogs who typically are mixes of many different dogs. I'm down to see, like, what the most out there, like, mutt is.
I would almost go the other way and say I'm ready for, like, the freak dog show, like who bred the biggest dog, you know, like that kind of thing.
Yeah,
just biggest dog show.
Largest head.
Yeah, just like short, like I have dachshunds. We're a dachshund family. And so just like shortest legs. Like, right. Let me see the dog with the least leg.
Basically looks like a caterpillar with four legs.
Yeah, like I guess that I would watch that because that at least would be kind of interesting. It'd be like, right. Oh my God, look at that monstrosity. I just trotted out here.
What's something you think is underrated?
Underrated. Well, I think rotisserie chicken. Not as I was coming up with my things, I realized they're almost all food. but like nobody really gives it up for rotisserie chicken, especially now Thanksgiving Day, you know, turkey is the star of the show. Turkey stinks. It's not good. It's dry. It's huge. It's like okay when it, you know, when it's hot and then it just becomes like eating chalk.
Right.
Rotisserie chicken, on the other hand, tender, delicious, much smaller, easier to manage. And I feel like it should be more popular than it is. And it's not.
Well, I remember like when Boston Market came out, that was like a game changer for rotisserie chickens.
It's great.
That's
I don't
more
know
or
why,
less
what
all
happened.
My family eats now is rotisserie chicken.
Also, maybe underrated, if we're talking like birds we eat, duck. Duck is definitely the best one.
Oh, yeah.
Oh, really?
And it's not, I mean, I think so.
It's succulent.
Like, yeah, it's not dry. It's really good. But I don't know. People just like aren't into eating duck for whatever reason. They're like, give me this dry turkey.
I agree with the turkey thing, and every time I've complained about it, there's always been some foodie present who's like, you've just not had
good it the
turkey.
Right way.
Yeah. You just have to have my turkey.
I mean, you could probably say that about almost any food that kind of stinks. Like,
right.
So I'm sure an amazing chef could do something wonderful with it, but, you know, no one in my family is that.
One year, my mom, like, salted the living shit out of it, so it was, like, real. Like, it had, like, almost like a salt crust on it, and it was actually fucking great.
Ooh, wow.
Yeah,
that sounds...
Yeah.
But it preserved your insides after one bite.
Yeah, exactly. I have not
That's
aged
great.
Since.
Also underrated, I'll just throw this one out there. I don't know if you guys watch this show, The Great British Bake Off.
I have heard great things
it's
about
amazing.
That, and every
Fantastic.
Great thing I've heard about it has... not convinced me to watch it because it just, they're just like, it's so boring, but like in a great way. And it's just,
oh, it's not boring to me.
It's not boring.
I find it not boring. I mean, look, there's no stakes. Like, I don't even think they win anything. They just win like they just get to win. That's it. I don't think there's like a cash prize.
No, the thing that really drew me in is that like how the English just treat each other, like on an American reality contest show. It's like cutthroat, fuck you, like I'm going to hide ingredients. And like in on the Great British Bake Off, they're like, they're so kind to each other. They're helping each other, supporting each other. And to me, that was like one of the most entertaining things. Like, wow, I love watching. I guess my new form of entertainment is just watching people treat each other with respect and kindness.
Right. Well, I mean, that's what's so nice about it is like, I'm, you know, especially now, it seems just like everyone is just immersed in nastiness and awful things all the time. So like, I just put on this stupid British show with these like friendly, quaint little British people in a tent making cakes. And it's just a real nice palate cleanser. You're like, oh, I guess there are still just nice people in the world out there. And they admit when they did a bad job, which is pretty funny for a reality show. They're just like, I'm sorry. It came out garbage. I'm sorry. It's like, it's rubbish. I'm like, who does that on a show you're trying to win?
Right.
We just lie on our American.
We don't own our mistakes over here.
I mean, it gets defensive.
It almost sounds like it could be its own genre of reality show where it's people who treat each other well, as opposed because that does seem to be just an unspoken rule of American reality shows is that you just hate each other and will lie and cheat until
and disrespect, right?
Even if there is no object, like the object is to like talk shit about someone the moment they leave the room,
right.
Like because I think reality producers have just assumed that like that's how you create drama or something like that. But yeah, I would just say that, again, you guys are trying to sell me on this, and the adjectives you're using are stupid, quaint, tent, no stakes. so it's just, I don't quite get it.
Yeah.
I'm going to watch it one of these days, but I just don't.
Let me throw in one more just pitch for it, in that they have some true weirdos making cakes and stuff in there.
Well, that's
I mean, some real characters.
Ah, weirdos, Jack, huh? Weirdos, huh?
I do like weirdos.
Yeah. If not
characters, welcome in my world.
Uh-oh.
all right. Let's get into format. So we're trying to take a sample of the ideas that are out there changing the world, whether we're looking or not. We talk about politics and the president and the news, but we also talk about movies and supermarket tabloids because those affect the ideas people have. The covers of tabloids still get into millions of people's minds every day because people still need to buy milk, and mostly they have eyes, and the tabloids are all run by a weird Trump-worshipping creep from New York named David Pecker. So we're trying to just take a temperature of what's affecting the national shared consciousness. And one of the things we like to do to start things off is ask our guest if there is any sort of myth that's out there in the zeitgeist that based on their personal like life experience they would like to correct for the audience.
All right. You know, I brought up before we started recording, I brought up a different one, but now here's one I just thought of because I'm from Connecticut, which is a, you know, tried and true blue state. I think its reputation is as like a very rich little liberal enclave, and that it has this very kind of like liberal mindset and whatever, and that is very true along the coastline. But the myth that there are no conservatives, like deep South conservatives in the Northeast, I have to say is sadly untrue. It is like anywhere in the Northeast, that's not just Connecticut, anywhere in upstate New York and Massachusetts, there are just, it's basically Kentucky in a lot of places, like rebel flags flying, people like driving around, like for real. Yeah, which is so funny to me. So I'm like, you realize that this part of the country went the other way out of that Civil War, right? You guys know how that went down, right? But just like, yeah, like true kind of, and they, I think they even talk with a weird Southern accent. Like, I grew up with kids in my, like, you know, little liberal town where I grew up who kind of would be like, hell yeah, man.
Really? Like,
where, what part of Connecticut are you from where you're getting a little twang on it?
Right.
And, you know, so just as there, you always hear about these kind of, like Austin, for instance, in Texas, has this little blue, you know, this little blue beacon in the middle of this deep red state.
Red.
It goes the other, it definitely goes the other way too, where there's just like just as many kind of like rednecky, kind of backwards thinking folks up in the rich liberal coastal spots. So I guess this is my plea to your, any of your Southern, deeply, deeply right-wing listeners to, you know, don't hate on us so much. There's your kind of people up there too.
Right. Yeah. Connecticut's interesting. So, in your town, do people root for the Red Sox or the Yankees?
That's a fascinating question because my town where I grew up is the last town in New Haven County, which is kind of like where the New York influence ends.
Yeah.
And then from there east, it's all kind of New England-y, like very Red Sox, Patriots. It's very kind of like Boston-centric. And then from there west is all New York-centric. So it's like a split town.
Yeah.
Divided.
There's a really interesting article or a book called The 11 Nations of America where this guy basically broke down these 11 regions of America based on like the who settled them. And he pointed out that like a lot of the values that came over with them from their country are still there. And Connecticut's really interesting because you can actually like see there's like a dividing line, and below that dividing line, people are like Giants and Yankees fans. And above that dividing line, it's Red Sox. And, but they have like completely different values. The guy's argument is that if America were drawn along the same lines of Western Europe, we would be 11 separate nations, you know, with Yankeedom and like Massachusetts and all those places being one country. And then I forget what he calls it's basically like Dutch people settled
right.
Manhattan and New York and Southern Connecticut. But
I always grew up with a much more kind of New York leaning attitude, even though I was like right on that line of like half my friends were all just kind of this, like half of them moved to Boston and I was just not interested in Boston, still not interested in Boston.
Yeah. Boston, speaking of northern rednecks, Boston is probably like, and you hear this from athletes who, you know, have to play in Boston, say that Boston's like the most racist city in the country, essentially.
Yeah. Oh, yeah. 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 I mean, I guess I don't have any firsthand experience. They're pretty nice to white people, from what I can tell, just from going out there. No one was ever really racist to me there, but I've definitely heard. I mean, look, the Boston Tea Party was like, it was a very Boston thing to do, like kind of dress up in these like offensive costumes and like, you know, wreck some property and stuff.
It's right.
Like, that's not that out of character for like, you know, some Bruins fans or something after a game. Like, that's not crazy.
Right. All right. We're going to take a quick break. And when we get back, we're going to get into the news. And we're back. So we wanted to get into some of the just torrents of bad news that we're being pelted with these days. It seems like the FCC is planning on repealing net neutrality. Miles, you want to explain what that means to people?
It basically requires our internet service providers and these telecoms companies to treat all of your web traffic equally. So it doesn't matter what site it's from or what the content is, that the information flows, you know, unobstructed, and there are no paywalls to get behind. And it's like basically like, you know, it's like a utility. It's like water, you know, just let it flow. But yeah, it was announced today that basically that the FCC is going to vote to roll back basically all the Obama era rules around net neutrality, which obviously is like a huge celebratory moment for telecoms providers because they're hiding behind arguments. It's like, well, you know, these regulations, man, they really kept us from investing and whatnot. But for people who are really big proponents of net neutrality, and I think every single person listening should be, is that this can lead to a very, very slippery slope of if now the telecoms companies can decide, you know, how our information is moving or what sites, you know, if it's possible to throttle data to certain sites, that's like, that'll be the beginning of like sort of corporate sanctioned censorship of our information. So, you know, like one thing would be like, you know, like telecoms company could like block certain websites. So if you wanted to, you could go to the websites that they own for like a free price or no paywall, or they'd be like, hey, how about you pay a little more and now you can access Politico, or you can access The Post, or you can access whatever the website is that you like. And the other thing to worry about is like the idea of like fast lanes too, because that's another idea that's been thrown around, is that that these telecoms providers can actually create a fast lane. So if like your Netflix, they're like, well, if you want your data to get to your users quicker, you can pay to be in our fast lane. That way your video loads quick enough. But that would also be a tremendous disadvantage to like companies that don't have that kind of financial capital.
Right.
So again, this isn't like the end of it, like, but at the very least, this is the very beginning of a possibly troubling, movement to like, you know, and net neutrality, which would be pretty tragic, because right. I think in the end of the day, we've all benefited from the open internet,
yeah.
And if we need to keep it open, because yeah, along with all the shitty things that happen on the internet, this free flow of information, aside from like convincing yourself you have cancer on WebMD, there are other really good things that happen. So yes, I think people need to. I think once this debate begins, people need to really be on top of this to make sure, you know, that we keep our internets free and open.
Yeah. I mean, I am only have a career because I started a website that would definitely not have existed if you know, the internet operated like the rest of businesses, and you know, you needed a shitload of capital just to start a website, which it sounds like could be the direction things are headed.
Well, yeah, more so in the sense of like the way you want the data to be served. I mean, obviously, right. You can start a website for a little money, but then if
you want people to go to that website,
yeah, if there are no if these regulations are complete, you know, it turns into the Wild West crazy stuff. I mean, like the nightmare scenario could, yeah, be that like it would be very hard for you to have any kind of exposure.
Right. Yeah. I feel like we have, like, the more research I do into our country, the more it seems like we have way too many barriers to entry and like artificial,
yeah,
like doors being closed. Last week, on the 16th, the FCC voted in a 3-2 split to limit the program called Lifeline, which basically funds internet access for low-income communities. It was 3 Republicans to 2 Democrats. But yeah, it's all part of the FCC's, this new FCC's idea that internet is not, you know, a given right or something that we all need access to.
Well, and also, it's like an attack on people of color, too, like, most of the people that benefit from this are people of color, and also this affects people who live on tribal lands. And it's just crazy to think, you know, this was a program that was started by Ronald Reagan in 85 because he felt like a lot of people just didn't have a phone and thought that was probably a problem. And then over time, it evolved, like under Bush 2 in 2005, it used to cover cell phones. And then last year in 2016 is when the FCC added broadband to lists of services that were covered under Lifeline. The reason
Ronald Reagan, the guy who invented like hating government, is like, was like, man, it's still crazy that some low income people don't have access to phone lines. So we need to give them access to phone lines so that they can just have normal modern lives. And now they're backing away from that, the FCC, because they're bad people. Ajit Pai, bad dude.
The dude with the worst Reese's peanut butter oversized coffee mug we've ever seen.
Well, he has like a running bit where he just, at every press conference, he brings out a giant coffee mug.
Yeah.
And it's like the Shania bit in I Heart Huckabees. It's like his one joke that he goes to every time.
Yeah, it's a tricky thing. Like, first of all, disclaimer, I do work for Comcast, I guess, technically, I think. They don't cut my check, but that said, I'm a Spectrum customer at home, so. But it's like, you know, on the one hand, you don't want government regulation of the internet, because it was precisely not that that made the internet great to begin with. You know, it was just the companies decided to treat all traffic equally. And then it, it seemed like that just kind of happened very naturally, you know, because there weren't any just massively powerful internet companies yet. And then I think during the Obama era, they realized like, oh, we better like enshrine this, this kind of level playing field in policy. Otherwise, you know, a couple of giant companies and telecoms could kind of take over, you know? So it's weird because like, I also don't think you want the government saddling telecoms with like a billion regulations, you know, like the one regulation is treat all traffic equally, and that seems perfectly fine. So like I get the argument from the other side. I don't think that argument is real. I don't think, you know, that those net neutrality rules were stifling innovation or whatever they're saying.
Right.
But it's like stifling. I don't trust telecoms to treat all traffic equally, even though they claim that they will. It's like, well, you know, why would you when you have shareholders who demand a profit, you know?
Right.
If there's this free way to make a profit, pretty much, to just go, all right, well, we'll just charge Netflix more, whatever,
right?
Because they're eating up half of the bandwidth every single night. What's to stop them from doing that, you know? And also, like, what's to stop Netflix from paying it? They will, because right. They need to make money too. You know, like it just sucks. It's like, oh, we had this great kind of open, cool thing, and then it's like when the band you like gets famous, and it's like, oh, now everybody's like scrambling to it.
Now the concerts suck. Yeah,
yeah. It's like, oh, I can't like, oh, I used to be able to just kind of like show up and get a ticket, and, you know,
right.
Now I'm like buying one on StubHub or whatever, and I'm right. In the nosebleed. So I don't know. I mean, part of me has faith that even if they do roll this back, there's going to be some kind of maverick company, some like Elon Musk type, who's like, guess what? I built a new like infrastructure, and I'm not going to like, if you sign up with my company, I'm not going to throttle anything. I'm not going to charge more for anything. So I feel like they might go after the profit so aggressively that they could end up just killing their own business, if that makes sense.
Yeah. Mm-hmm. Although, you know? I do feel like, you know, those massive companies seem to always find a way to like block out other companies without government regulation. And I mean, the internet is already being sort of gobbled up by enormous like monopolies like Google and Facebook and stuff. So it's not like the internet currently is this utopia. You know, I just think that adding this on top of the already, you know, dominant monopolies would just be like one tangle too many to sort of untangle eventually.
To me, the bigger thing is that at this point in time, in this day and age, to say that, you know, broadband access and internet access is not a utility seems crazy to me.
Right.
Like, so much of everything is run off this technology that it's like, I mean, you know, not declassifying it as a utility seems incorrect, right. I'll put it,
yeah,
and wrong.
All right. We need to get into our sex crime watch, or Benghazi, we've been calling it.
Benghazi.
Because the updates keep coming. So Charlie Rose has been fired by CBS now, it was actually a big story on the internet yesterday that Wes Anderson might have called this all the way back in the Royal Tenenbaums. There was a clear Charlie Rose corollary, and during the sort of montage where Gwyneth Paltrow's character is like shown hooking up with all these different guys. They cut to her on a book tour with this Charlie Rose character, and he's like fondling her backstage while she just like sits there looking unhappy. So I don't know. It does seem like maybe he was onto something there. But he is, Charlie Rose himself is officially out.
Fired.
Yeah.
Wow.
He gone. John Lasseter, who I think is the director of the Toy Story films and the Cars franchise, or yeah, some of the Cars franchise.
Huge was, Pixar guy.
Just took a leave of absence for missteps, I think is how they're putting it.
John Conyers, Michigan congressman. He apparently like settled to just kind of keep this quiet. But it seems like through this, like, I guess these legal documents leaked and it revealed kind of what sort of how sort of backwards the whole process is of trying to sue a congressman or someone in on like on Capitol Hill when they've harassed you.
Yeah, it's just the reporting process is terrible. And that podcast we were making fun of earlier, The Daily, actually has a really great episode today that talks about this, that just goes through the process of what it takes to report somebody on Capitol Hill for sexual harassment or sexual assault. And so when somebody tries to report, especially a congressperson, for sexual harassment, they have to go into months of counseling with the person who they're accusing. So the accuser and the accused need to like sit down together and with a mediator who like tries to mediate the problem, which is just like just a nightmare for any victim of sexual assault. And then if for some reason they're able to like, you know, have the insane amount of courage and stamina to keep their accusation up after like sitting in meetings with this person for months and having to repeat their allegations over and over again, then like if it goes to court eventually, the senator themselves gets legal support paid for by the taxpayers, and the accuser gets no support. So
it's a system made to protect the predators.
Right, and make it as uncomfortable as possible to report anything like this.
It's like a Nathan For You kind of like episode idea of like where it's like, oh, you want to accuse someone? Go through all these hoops.
Right.
Like with the gas station rebate episode of Nathan For You, it's like, yeah, we'll sell you dollar gas at $1.75, but to get the rebate, you have to climb up a mountain, answer all these riddles, and stay overnight until you can find the rebate box. Like essentially to just dissuade anybody from actually following through. So it's, I think that's another thing that I think people need to sort of begin to put their attention on. It's like that there's not even a real humane way for people to report this kind of stuff, especially if you're working on the Hill.
That's very typical government, like just making everything as hard as absolutely possible.
Yeah, that's why we're fans of the Koch brothers here at the Daily Zeitgeist. We're anti-big government.
They are the best. I love them. The real slap in the face is legal fees paid by the taxpayer. That's just a real, like, come on.
Right.
That's, I mean, you know, I understand, like, taxes funding certain things for, you know, our elected representatives, since they're theoretically working on behalf of their constituents, but legal fees, come on. Don't make me complicit in your shitty behavior.
Yeah.
Don't make me financially liable for your shitty behavior.
I mean, to go along with this, there's even more news about Roy Moore, the Senate candidate in Alabama, who's, you know, an accused pedophile. And there's many, many accusations that seem to confirm these allegations. But the most recent one was a story about how he met his wife. And it's fucking insane. Like, apparently they met when she was 23 and he was 37.
Just real quick, like, when you hear, like, this has been a thing that they've put out in front of him, like, look, he has this wife. He has this, like, very normal marriage. You know, she is, like, speaking now more than he is because that they want that message to get across. He has a wife who is not, like, a preteen. So, obviously, this guy must be normal
right.
in the logic of Roy Moore supporters. But, yeah, this story is amazing.
Yeah, so he was saying when he was deputy, I'll just read this quote. This is a recent interview. He talked about how he attended a dance recital at Gadsden State Junior College and said, well, when I was deputy district attorney many years before we got married, I saw her at a dance recital and I was standing, at the back of the auditorium and I saw her up front. I remember her name. It was Kayla Kaiser, KK. I never did meet her then and I left. It was 8 years later or something when I met her. And when she told me her name, I remembered KK. And I said, haven't I met you before? Of course, she was younger, and she said, I don't think so, and brushed it off. And then I told her and identified it was the dance. It was something I had never forgotten. So he's saying that they met when she was 23, and right. he remembers her from 8 years before that.
When she was 15.
Yes.
Was when he actually, like, had his love at first sight moment.
Yes. Yeah.
I mean, that's a very sweet story if he was 15.
Right. Yeah, exactly.
But the problem is, at best, he was maybe 29.
Yeah.
Yeah, I don't know. What was he doing at that dance recital?
Yeah, exactly.
Right.
That's never a good look to be the 30-year-old dude at a dance recital where they're minor. Like, just like as a fan, what do you say? Like, I'm a patron of the arts.
Right.
That's
yeah.
I mean, I guess if your daughter's like, her son is dancing in it, you're going to want to get there, support your kid.
Oh, of course, yeah.
But I think if, like, you know, if you're there supporting your kid and then you look over, there's some, like, 30-year-old dude rolling solo who's not a talent agent.
Right. Yeah. Does he need to be here because of his duties? Is he, like, handing out?
No.
He's like, got popcorn. He's just, like, just
making sure everything's on the up and up.
Right.
Yeah. Want to make sure these are legal dances that are happening.
Yeah, make them. Yeah. Who knows? I mean, Alabama, there might have been some, like, some Footloose type dancing rules
right.
in town.
They're like, they're not doing the hot potato, are they?
No boogie music.
Right.
Don't you have this weird feel? I remember feeling this way about Trump, like in the run up to the election. I just remember going, I think he's going to win.
Yeah.
And everyone was like, you're insane. There's no way. Look at the polls. And you're like, I don't know, man. Look at those rallies and stuff. You're just like, I think he's going to win.
Yeah, I mean, the polls and the immediate aftermath were, I think he was down.
He was down 12. I think it's now close 12. To 8 or something.
No, then it went to 8. Now it's tied.
Oh, now they're neck and neck again?
Yeah, they're neck and neck again.
Oh, interesting. Hey,
yeah,
guys.
He's probably, the way it's trending, they say that usually it's, you won't see the immediate drop-off right after a scandal because, like, Republicans won't respond to the
right.
polls or whatever. But this time it's just there was an immediate drop and then he bounced right back, probably because he was able to get his message out there that this is all a left-wing conspiracy.
Yep.
Yeah. So
we're always cooking up those conspiracies.
The left wing's ability to go back and get that mall to ban him back in the early 80s was.
I mean, that could be the next logical jump people use for these conspiracies. Like, well, they're clearly time traveling to create these scandals after the fact.
If the left has a time machine and this is what they're doing with it, that's a bigger crime than anything we've talked about so far.
Right.
I mean, come on. Low stakes time travel.
All right, well, yeah, it's a time machine that only goes to Alabama in the 70s and 60s.
So, good news, we have invented time travel.
Bad news, it's only a very specific time and place we can go.
It goes back to early 80s Alabama. All right, we're going to take a quick break, and when we come back, we're going to talk about Black Friday and Thanksgiving. And we're back. So I wanted to take on one of the great cultural influencers of our time, Andy Rooney.
And Andy Rooney is
he was basically the opinion columnist for the TV show 60 Minutes, 60 Minutes is a what's called a news magazine on CBS that I don't know how young our audience is, but great show. And Andy Rooney would come on at the end of these great shows that broke all these huge stories and be like, I don't like toothbrushes. They annoy me.
Isn't he in like an office? It looks like he's hoarding.
Yes. Right. He's in an office that has like books all over the shelves, but then it also has like a huge stack of new, like old newspapers on it that makes it look, yeah, like he is, you know,
he was a curmudgeon. He was just a, yes. He was a crank and a curmudgeon.
He was the cartoon definition of curmudgeon.
Yeah.
So anyways, 60 Minutes, because it is their somethingth anniversary, I think like 35th or something, is taking a look back at old Andy Rooney segments. For some reason, that's what they're choosing to do. And so this past week, 60 Minutes, they looked back at Andy Rooney's hot take on the commercialization of Thanksgiving. At one point, he was like, these holiday mailers come falling out of magazines like confetti. Holiday is the new religiously correct word for Christmas. So he was like presaging the war on Christmas.
He was ahead
by
of the
Fox
curve
News.
There.
Yeah, ahead of the curve, because this is back all the way back in 2008. Somewhere Bill O'Reilly was watching that and like
writing,
got an immediate erection, and that's how he knew he had hit on pay dirt. But then he also comes out hard against people whose only interest is money moving in on a nice non-commercial holiday like Thanksgiving, because his main argument is that people are moving Christmas decorations and things further and further forward, and Christmas is this like commercial holiday and they're only in it for the money, and Thanksgiving has always been this pure holiday where we give thanks to our pilgrim forebears.
For giving, you know, influenza soaked blankets and stuff.
Right.
They didn't do that. I just read a book about the pilgrims. They weren't really bad, you guys. I know. But they were pretty good. They were pretty cool in terms of all the white people who came to the New World.
They were among the coolest.
They were definitely the least awful. You know
what? What's the name of the book?
It's called Mayflower. Huh. It's pretty good. Yeah, I was like, oh.
Does it talk about
wrong.
The fact that like 95% of the Massachusetts Bay Indians had been wiped out, like in the like that they showed up at a post-apocalyptic version of Massachusetts Bay?
Yeah.
That's crazy. That like the fact that that detail was left out. Like that.
Wait,
makes...
that what?
Well, I was going to talk about this on tomorrow's episode, but basically when the pilgrims showed up, 95% of the Massachusetts Bay Indians had just been wiped out by the smallpox plague. So like before they arrived. So that's why the Columbus came in 1492, and then there was like this big, you know, gap before the pilgrims came to settle it.
Right.
And the reason was because the New World was densely populated by Native Americans who would have like kicked any settlers' asses if they tried to settle it. But then there was a literal apocalypse. Like the plague that swept through is like way bigger than the Black Death that like we know about from Europe. Like,
wow.
And it just basically the plague acted as a lead blocker for all the white
settlers.
It was the full pack
that blew it open.
Right. So they just basically moved into these towns that had been built and settled by Native Americans and like just had the easiest time in the world. They like moved into it. They were like sleeping in their homes and like using their bowls and stuff. But they were just like, God's providence is great, isn't it, brothers and sisters? But anyways, we're going to talk more about that on tomorrow's episode. But just my quibble with Andy Rooney's thing is that Thanksgiving is actually, the day is determined by basically when retailers want Black Friday to be. So I think I always thought of Black Friday as like the day after Thanksgiving.
Right.
It was just like an accident that happened to be a shopping day. But they determined the day of Thanksgiving because based on how long retailers wanted the Christmas shopping period to be. Back in the 30s, Thanksgiving was the last Thursday in November. And then, because that would have been like too short a shopping period one year because it was like a fifth Thursday. There was a fifth Thursday in November. It was like all the way at the end. They just moved it up to the second to last Thursday in November to make more room for shopping.
Like so, this year.
Right.
There's five Thursdays in November.
Right, exactly.
That's why I feel like Thanksgiving snuck up on me this year. I'm like, wait,
right.
It's already
it's like
this
already
week.
Thanksgiving. Yeah. So Thanksgiving is always and has always been about like starting the Christmas shopping period.
I feel like already this week or even last week, you started seeing those Lexus commercials where these impossibly happy families are somehow got a new Lexus in the driveway with the bow on top. Like, yeah, like that's already starting up. I actually had like a visceral reaction. I was like, no.
Right.
Like, don't drag me into this quite yet. I'm not ready to go into Christmas quite yet. And I think that there's something to say about like the marketing of it happening too soon.
Right.
But I don't care if you like, yeah, sure. Thanksgiving is done and dusted. You want to start getting in the Christmas period? That's totally your prerogative. But don't attack me with all your ads so quickly. That's all.
I like it. I'm on the complete other side of that because I believe that I'm a better person at Christmas. I'm right. And it's immediately followed by like getting all my tax stuff in the mail when I become very stingy and Republican for a little while. Where I'm like, oh my God, I don't want to pay taxes. Like, oh, look how much money I have to give away. So the sooner you can get me in that generous kind of, that generous Christmas spirit, the better. And those ads help me get there. Not really those Lexus ones. Mostly I just think about if that's ever actually happened when I see those, if anyone's ever gotten a Lexus, put a giant bow on
right.
it and given it to someone.
Yeah, listen to you guys
Christmas.
Talk. Listen to you guys talk. It's almost like you don't buy other people Lexuses for Christmas or get ones given to you.
Yo, that's some 1%er shit right there. Like, I will never know a Christmas where like a fucking luxury automobile is just like chilling out there like, surprise!
Right.
I've bought a car before and it's like a real hassle. There's a lot of paperwork and stuff like that. I just can't imagine getting that done and getting it in the driveway and everything Christmas morning.
Yeah, like, and then how do you hide it? It's not like we buy someone a puppy where you could do, like, you know what I mean? Like, you got to hide a brand new car.
Or you just hide it in a dark box for weeks at a time.
Poke some air holes in
it. Yeah, just like a puppy.
I got to wonder, though, you know what? Maybe I'll go to a Lexus dealership this week and I'll be like, if I buy a Lexus, do you give me the bow?
Right.
Because if they don't, that's an absolute slap in the face. It should come with the bow.
Ooh, that would be an interesting lawsuit.
Yeah.
I was led to believe there would be a bow.
Yeah. I'm pretty sure they do give away giant bows.
Damn it.
I mean,
all right, well, let's go deep dive.
All right.
Investigative journalism coming at you soon.
Streeter, thanks so much for joining us, man. This was a lot of fun.
Thanks for having me, guys.
What do you have to plug?
Oh, man. Well, I guess SNL. Watch SNL.
And this is Saturday Night Live,
this,
right?
Yeah, it's Saturday Night Live, and it's on live on Saturday nights on NBC, the national, and that's the National Broadcasting Corporation, I think.
Or channel.
Or company. I'm not sure. It's one of the two. The Peacock, baby. Read the trades.
And where can people follow you on social media?
You can get me on Twitter, Street Seidel. I can't believe I couldn't get Streeter Seidel, but there you go. So it's Street Seidel on Twitter.
Awesome. Miles, where can people follow you?
You can follow me on Twitter and Instagram at Miles of Gray.
You can follow me at Jack_O'Brien on Twitter. You can follow us at Daily Zeitgeist on Twitter, at The Daily Zeitgeist on Instagram. We have a Facebook fan page that is The Daily Zeitgeist, and you can check out our website, dailyzeitgeist.com, where we post the episodes, and we also post links to every source for everything we talked about, which we call the footnotes. And that's going to do it for today. We will be back for one more episode on this shortened holiday week tomorrow, so we will talk to you then. Bye.